Right, I'm about a minute late this morning. You'll forgive that, I think. You don't have any choice, I tell you. Good morning. Well, it's not a good morning. It's horrendous here in Salford and in the northwest in general. What's it called this time? Storm Ciara, is it? Is blowing a gale, 55, 60 mile per hour winds and biblical rainfall. I'm looking out the window of the studio right now and it's pretty horrendous indeed. All right, we've got each other though. This is Sunday View. I'll be looking through the papers as usual and we'll hear one or two snippets from the Sunday morning talk shows. That is the UK Sunday morning talk shows. Hope all is well in your world. Thanks for joining me. This is your Richie Allen radio show. Sunday View it is. Marvelous.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, it's horrendous out there. Nobody will be going outside today, I don't think. Not in this part of the world, anyway. Indeedy. Nice, relaxing weekend so far. I'm still kind of unwell, really. And I'm a bit worried about that. I'm not going to bore you with that nonsense, because you don't want to be here. You've got your own problems, right? But I've had this chest infection for about a month now. And I've battled through with it. I've not given into it. I've not missed any time, I've not missed any work, but it's still very, very present, and I'm a bit worried about it, so I'm going to take some steps to do something about it tomorrow. So there you are. So yeah, I'm a bit under the weather still, but anyway, like I said, you don't care, do you? Fair enough, I don't mind. I've got thick skin, me. Terrible, terrible weather here. It's unnerving, actually, the weather when it's like that. It's a bit unnerving, isn't it? You wonder about your roof, don't you? Don't you? You wonder about everything, batten down the hatches. We don't get weather like that very often when it's as mad as that. And we've got a very well soundproof studio, but you can probably hear it. Yeah, you can hear it. Jesus. All right. Well, anyway, look, enough about the bloody weather. It's depressing. Now, according to the election exit report, say it again, Rich. Say it properly, Rich. According to the general election exit poll in Ireland, the predicted result, the exit poll, you know what an exit poll is? It's based on the responses of people after they've voted. So when people walk out of the polling station, some pollsters, some experts who know what they're doing, allegedly, well, they ask a series of detailed questions. And from that, they get a picture of what the result is going to be like. Now, counting began in Ireland a couple of hours ago at the count centres right across the country. And the exit poll last night at 10 o'clock or just after 10 o'clock, which was based on the responses of people, around 5,000 people at 250 polling stations across Ireland, suggests that there is a three-way tie between Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, a dead heat between three parties, which means that if that is the result, and it probably will be, well, it means that there's mass confusion as to what might happen next. The poll gave Fine Gael 22.4%, Sinn Féin 22.3%, and Fianna Fáil 22.2%. Never anything like that before. The Irish electorate has never witnessed anything like that before, a three-way draw. And there is, there is hour-by-hour coverage, minute-by-minute coverage on Irish television, RTE, Radio Television 1, at the moment. So what would it mean? Well, it would mean, well, chaos, basically. But that's all I can say about that. Big, big weekend for Sinn Féin, the party, the Republican Party, which has never enjoyed such success in Ireland in the history of, well, in the history of democracy. In Ireland, counting has begun. We'll wait and see what happens a bit later on. But I suppose they're going into meltdown in Ireland now, the political commentators. The commentariat are probably in meltdown. So we'll look at the front pages. You might have an opinion on this. If you do, tweet it to me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, and I'll read your tweets on it. You might be in Ireland. You might have an opinion. Tell me, and I'll read it out. All right. Okay. Marvellous. Hi to Liz, who says, Richie, the storm is clearing up here over the border, says Liz. Good stuff, Liz. Dogs have been walked, says David Kona. So have ours. That's the thing, you see. You don't say to a dog, hey, listen, Jazz, it's miserable out there, so there's no feckin' way I'm going out in it. Your dog won't have any of that. Dogs are impervious to weather. It doesn't matter what it's like. Freezing, belting it down rain. Dogs don't give a shite. And that's probably the way to be. The front page of the Sunday Times. UK faces major outbreak, warns top virus experts. So, I suppose the top story in the UK this morning, across the board, is coronavirus. And in the Sunday Times, I've got the Sunday Times here, the digital edition. We subscribe for the show, so we've got the digital edition. The Times is quoting Professor Peter Piot, or Piot. He's the director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He's increasingly alarmed by the rapid spread of coronavirus, and that because of the rapid spread of it, we might suffer here in the UK a major outbreak. Now, this guy, Peter Piot, or Piot, was responsible for discovering, well, he co-discovered Ebola, and apparently he co-discovered the presence of AIDS in Africa, yeah. So he's saying we might be on the verge of a major outbreak here in the UK, and we better be bloody careful about that, he says. Straight to the Andrew Marr show then. Marr has a panel of journalists every Sunday morning for a few minutes. They review the papers. The panel today included The Guardian's Anushka Astana and also The Sun's Jane Moore. You will hear Jane Moore from The Sun first. They're talking about the scary coronavirus stories in the press today.
So the panic now seems to be getting bigger and bigger. The government, Whitehall officials, by the way, have been ordered to assess the risks, it says here, of vital goods becoming unavailable. Now, this piece in the Sunday Times, which you wouldn't necessarily call a vital goods for people, is all about the fashion industry. Of course, it's vital for the fashion industry because a lot of their... Yeah. product is caught up in the blockage between here and China. But I presume what they're talking about, obviously, is our medications going to become unavailable? And here we have a picture of a woman in China, even with her dog wearing...
Even though dogs can't get coronavirus.
No.
So it's a pointless thing to do, really. But in China...
It's a pointless thing to do, says Andrew Marr correctly. But I mean, the people behind these agendas, they must laugh their arses off. To the point where their arses have to be surgically sewn back onto their bodies. When they see people putting masks on their dogs. Chinese have a strange relationship with their dogs, don't they? On the one hand, they're terrified they might get coronavirus. On the other hand, they go well with chips and gravy in China. Anyway, more from Andrew Marr.
China, Anushka, there's been an extraordinary level of activity. I mean, they've quarantined entire cities, they've closed roads and rail and airports. We've never really seen anything like this before, and they themselves are saying it's like a war footing.
I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary, and some of the scenes that we're hearing about within the hospitals are, as you mentioned at the beginning, things we'd never heard of before. I mean, in the papers, it's suggesting that doctors are actually wearing nappies because they can't come in and out of their protective gear in order to treat people. But sometimes they don't have that protective gear, so hundreds
some
and hundreds
are actually
of,
operating with no protection at all, knowing they will get the virus.
Becoming ill.
And then can't see
not,
their families.
Yeah, so they're not able to go home to their families. I mean, I've just picked out this story, which is a slightly heartwarming one amid it all, because, as you say, they shut down entire cities. So they shut down Wuhan at the time that people had been travelling for the new year. So many people couldn't get home.
Yep.
And there were many, many pets left at home without food. And there's a person here who's known to his friends as Old Cat, who's a vet working in the city, apparently getting hundreds of calls a day to go round and to try to save animals' lives that have been left without food.
Of course they are. Extraordinary.
And this, just quickly on this, the Sun on Sunday, they've done a great graphic here about a one-man flu contagion. It's basically just following this British businessman around the world. So he'd been at a conference in Singapore. He then went on holiday to France with some friends. And, of course, they've now become infected, and even the people in the neighbouring apartment have now been put into isolation for observation as well. So that's just one person.
That's one person. That's why it's out of China, it's going to spread everywhere. Andy, I don't know if I've spotted some people in the streets already wearing face masks in the UK. I don't know if it's the same up in the West Midlands or not.
They are, and it is the same up in the West Midlands. There are people in the UK wearing face masks even at the moment. And apparently this morning, the BBC is reporting that a British person in Mallorca has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. Wuhan evacuees arrived for quarantine in UK, says the BBC. A plane has landed a few minutes ago at Bryce Norton, and the people will be taken off it and will be spirited up to the Merseyside, to the Wirral, where they'll be forced to spend 2 weeks in quarantine. But they've got PlayStation consoles and, I don't know, they've probably got wanton, abandoned fucking sex probably as well. I mean, I bet you that's what's going on at that centre. Why not? You got nothing else to do for 2 weeks. Have sex with the person in the room next to you, whether he has coronavirus or not. Also on the BBC, coronavirus deaths exceed SARS fatalities as well. It's everywhere today. They just won't give up on it. 800 people. Well, hang on. I won't steal the thunder. I won't steal the thunder of the UK's, well, of the Chinese ambassador to the UK. We have a Chinese ambassador here, and his name is Liu Xiaoming. And he was on with Andrew Marr just after he had his news panel. Let's hear a bit of the Chinese ambassador. How many people have died thus far, says Andrew Marr. Here's Liu Xiaoming, the ambassador.
According to the latest figure, by the midnight Beijing time... the died case is 811.
811 have died now. There's 1.5 trillion people living in China. There's 1.5 gazillion, gabillion, gamillion in China. 811 have died.
And the cured cases is 2,649. So that is...
2,649. So they've identified 2,649, 2,649 who've got the virus, but it didn't kill them. They just got over it, basically.
That is very encouraging. It means the cured cases is three times of dead cases. That means the effectiveness of the treatment. Mm. And also we've seen that the confirmed cases for the first time exceeded suspected cases. That means because of the hospitalization rate is coming up, and you know we built the two hospitals just within
Indeed,
10 days.
Very fast, yes.
And that has been showing...
Two hospitals in 10 days. You could learn, I suppose, who's the health secretary at the moment? Matt Hancock. They tell lies about building hospitals here in the UK. You know, governments tell lies. They spin, they make up stories about the amount of hospitals that will be built in their manifestos. The Chinese could get two fully functioning hospitals built in 2 days. In 10 days. That's impressive. Even if it's horse shit, this story, and I think it is, it's the finest horse manure. That's bloody good going, that.
Showing the improvement of the treatment and the hospitalisation.
Is it the impression the rate of infection, however, is still increasing?
Yes. Rate is increasing. But I think people should not be panicked. If you compare the fatality case, not currently is 2%, much lower than Ebola. That is 40%.
He's like the guy who runs my Chinese, to be honest. He can't pronounce...
Well, even lower than SARS, which is 10%.
Yes.
And lower than the H1N1.
Yeah. That was bird flu.
Of 2009. That is 17%. And so there's no reason to be panicked. The Chinese government...
The mortality rate of bird flu, he said, was 17%, but nobody fucking got bird flu. So 17% of zero is zero. SARS, the mortality rate, what did he say? Did he say 8%? Did he? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But again, nobody got SARS. Nobody got swine flu. It's crap. But anyway, he says that the mortality rate of this coronavirus is 2%. All right.
Has adopted the most comprehensive, strict, conventional control measures.
Oh, they have. The Chinese have adopted strict conventional control methods. There's no doubt about that. Dragging people kicking and screaming from their houses. It's like something from a Hollywood film. It's seriously disturbing, actually. I don't know if you've seen any of the footage. People getting dragged out of their houses because they might have a virus. Lunacy. It is lunacy, right? But, you see, when you've got people in Yorkshire walking around with face masks, and the face mask is useless against any airborne infection, utterly useless, right? But don't let that stop you anyway. So he said three times as many people cured as getting ill. The rate might be increasing, but the strict measures are working. On the strict measures, we're hearing the Chinese ambassador to the UK, Liu Xiaoming. Mar wants to kind of get into the strict measures.
So you've done some extraordinary things as a government. You have effectively quarantined or put a roadblock, as it were, around whole cities, and big parts of the transport system and the economy have closed down while this is going on. Can I ask you, how long is this going to have to go on for?
At this moment, it's very difficult to predict when we are going to have an inflection point. We certainly hope it will come sooner. But the isolation quarantine measure has been very effective. So far, the most cases are concentrated in Hubei and Wuhan. You know, Hubei is about the size of England plus Scotland. And the population is about England plus Wales. So there's such a large area.
65 million people, therefore, around about that.
It's 59 million people. But the measure has been effective. Otherwise, it will spread out to the other parts of China. And also, I think the Chinese people are making contribution, not only, you know, for the safety, life, safety of life and health of it, of ourselves, but also to the that of the world people.
Listen, if you want a history or even a comprehensive history of these virus scares that amount to nothing, except millions of people volunteer to have the vaccine when it eventually comes out. That's what happens. It happened with swine flu, bird flu, raccoon flu, every other fucking flu that ever came out, right? Every other virus. They eventually got a vaccine. This was trumpeted on the global media stage. It was given blanket coverage and millions of people went and got the vaccine that they didn't need. Now, if you want a comprehensive history of all of that, go to nomorefakenews.com, nomorefakenews.com, and read John Rappaport, who's a real journalist. Now, finally on coronavirus, Robert Buckland is the UK Justice Secretary. He was on Andrew Marr's programme too. And he was asked about UK contingency plans for this most deadly of viruses if the piece in the Sunday Times is right and that it is going to hit the UK and very seriously. What are we going to do? Here's Justice Secretary Robert Buckland on The Mar Show with his answer.
Well, yes, Andrew, it's good to note that, of course, the NHS is always preparing itself for emergencies or situations of extreme pressure, and this is no exception. And the planning that goes on year in, year out will be put into good operation and is indeed being put into good operation at the moment. So I think we can confidently say that we are ready. This is, of course, a particularly widespread and dangerous outbreak.
No, it isn't.
And we are being extremely vigilant and taking action, working closely with the Chinese authorities.
Yeah, the usual bullshit. Jean Ann sent me a message here. Jean Ann says, no one appears to have thought this one through. If the Chinese controllers lock down productions, given cities are in quarantine, and it would appear they are now, where will all the goods the West take for granted come from? Is it a full stop, asks Jean Ann. Only the start of the beginning of the end of our way of life, and probably planned for yonks, she says. That's right. It's a very important aspect to all of this. And Mar did get into this a little bit with the ambassador. The shutdown in, or not shutdown in, but the shutdown of production and the impact that has on everywhere else in the world outside China. Have no doubt about it. That's definitely been thought out. And that is some aspect of what's going on here. It's astonishing. It's astonishing that ordinary, and I consider myself to be an ordinary man, you know, that more ordinary men and women don't stop to think, well, we've been here before, haven't we? And really, if 800 people have really died because of this virus, and that's dubious anyway, there isn't any proof proffered, no proffering of proof that 811 people have died because of this virus, right? There's no digging down into that statistic. Well, who were they? How old were they? Did they have pre-existing conditions? Did they have bronchial problems? Did they have asthma, like the BBG here? I'm almost compelled me when I say that to say I never smoked in my life. I never smoked a cigarette in my life. Never even tried it. Never tried it. Treat my body like a temple. I'm an Adonis, as you know. And I've never done anything that would harm my body. No smoking or anything like that. But I am, you know, predisposed to these lung and chest things when they go about. So how many of these people have conditions? How many of them had pulmonary obstructive fucking disorder? You know, and you know, that any virus might be a danger to them. They don't give you any real statistics. It's bullshit. This isn't a real thing. You know, this is all about the response to it. This is problem, reaction, solution. And they're obviously getting their reaction if people are going around the UK. White people are going around the UK wearing face masks. Jesus, how gullible. How much of a fucking hamster do you have to be? You know, to not stop and go, ah, fuck this. You know, we've heard this before. I'm not going to pay any attention to it. I'm just going to go about my business on a daily basis. Right, we'll hear more from that goon, the Justice Secretary, a bit later on about how he's planning to protect us from the terrorists who might get early release and who might stab us to death on Westminster Bridge. More from him in a few minutes. Right, the Sunday Telegraph front page will rush through the front pages. Scary story for Tory voters on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph. The headline is Tories eye mansion tax and raid on pensions. Well, I never. Johnson has been weighing up shock plans to impose a new mansion tax on people who own expensive homes. This will infuriate the grassroots of the Tory party, says the Telegraph. You're damn right it will. But he's got a majority now, that's pretty huge. Right? When has any government ever, right, told the truth in its manifesto about what it was going to do? The answer is never. Of course, before the election, he wasn't going to say to the conservative grassroots, middle class, upper income earning people, hey, listen, we're going to impose a mansion tax, right, and bring in a new tax on your pension. Of course, he wasn't going to fucking say that, was he? But now he's got 5 years to do what he wants. And it won't just be the wealthy being taxed to be Jesus either. This is what's coming down the road. Austerity is going to come back again. Austerity 2.0 under this Conservative government. There will be cuts to everything. Social welfare. Everything under this Conservative government, of course. That's what's going to happen. And people acting surprised by it in the press today. Whoa, we didn't see that coming. Give me a break, right? Also on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph, the headline, EU fishing demands could crash exit talks. Watch that one closely, right? Johnson will sell the UK's fishermen and fisherwomen down the effing river. I told you, take it to the bank, he will. Right? Okay, we'll leave that one alone. Sunday Express, PM gears up for Britain to boom. A love letter to the Prime Minister every week from the Sunday Express. They love him, the Express. So just another eulogy, eulogising Johnson and how he's going to take the country by the scruff and ensure that there is a renaissance of prosperity after Brexit. It's all bullshit in the Sunday Express. The Observer, now this is a serious, serious issue, but I'm not going to get into it today. I will get into it in the week. Revealed, says the front page of the Observer, how drugs giants can access your health records. This is a very good piece of journalism in the Observer about how the Department of Health and Social Care has been selling your data to American drugs companies and how they have been lying to you about it. It's a big expose in The Observer. You can read it online for free. Go to www.theguardian.com/observer. Theguardian.com/observer. And it is packed full of substantial evidence to support what it's saying. It's very good. Sunday Mirror. Soldier lay dead in barracks for 3 weeks. This is a poor chap called Bernard Mongan. Bernard was died in his army barracks and laid in his bed for 3 weeks until he was found late last month. His superiors failed to spot that he wasn't on duty. Wow. And the Sunday People, the headline of the day, by the way, the headline to end all headlines, migrants hide in lorry. Wait for it. Migrants, this is on the front page of the Sunday People. Migrants hide in lorry to escape Britain.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yes. Migrants hide in lorry to get out of Britain. We've had enough of this fucking place. We want to get out. And apparently, they were caught at Calais and sent back. Sent back. The far right is in meltdown today, reading the Sunday People. In meltdown. Not only are we letting in millions of migrants, but when they want to leave, we won't fucking let them leave. Apparently, this is true. Refugees were caught at Calais, trying to leave the country via Calais. They said that they were leaving over Brexit, and they were sent back. I'm sorry for laughing at that. It just makes me laugh. 28 minutes. It is past 11. And the Star on Sunday headline is Delhi Ali racism shame. Who the effing hell is Delhi Ali, Richie? Well, he's a footballer who plays for Tottenham Hotspur. He's an England international. And he made a video making fun of an Asian man over the coronavirus. And in the video, Delhi Ali had a face mask on. The paper says he has since apologised for his comments. Of course, it had to be racism, right? It couldn't just be a gag in bad taste. It had to be effing racism, right? Right? Yeah? This is Sunday View, the Richie Allen radio show. This is for Philip Schofield. Go on, Philip. Back with plenty more after George Michael. George Michael was a genius, absolute pop genius. Nobody wrote pop songs like George. And I never saw George Michael live. I've seen everybody, you know, pretty much everybody I've ever enjoyed listening to, I've seen them live. Because the oft-mentioned herself, her indoors, Caroline, and I, our only hobby really, apart from... No, I'm not going to go there. Our only hobby apart from... our only other hobby is watching live music. We watch a lot of live music. Music. And I never saw George Michael, which is to my lasting regret. I would have enjoyed seeing him, I think. Philip Schofield is in The Sun on Sunday. And I think the front page headline is something like, I must have been gay when I got married. You probably were, Phil. All right. I'm not going to read you much of this. But speaking of Jean-Anne Crowley, thespian titan, a titan of thespianism, is Jean-Anne. There is a very interesting piece in the Sunday Telegraph today, written by Dominic Cavendish, who's the Telegraph's theatre critic, darling. And the headline is, The Woke Brigade Are Close to Cancelling Shakespeare. Now, you've got to take with a large pinch of salt when you read stuff in the Sunday Telegraph or in the Mail on Sunday about wokeness. Because wokeness is a problem, and it's becoming an increasing problem, in my opinion. You might think differently, dear listener. But they tend to kind of exaggerate a little bit. But on Shakespeare, I think Dominic Cavendish has a point. I won't read you much of it. If you want to buy the Telegraph today, it's worth it just to read it. It's very good. And he talks about gender flipping of roles. And he backs it up with a lot of evidence. It's happening everywhere. And also this new discussion that's happening about whether Shakespeare might have been a woman and all of this. But it's good stuff, right? And how, the flipping of roles and casting people in roles that they shouldn't get around Shakespearean tragedies and whatnot. It's a very good piece by Dominic Cavendish, and he's beginning to wonder why the bloody hell. Good man. Good man, Dominic. Right, I'm going to read some of your comments, and I'm going to do that in exactly 60 seconds' time.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Good morning. Thanks to you for your tweets. Hi to Tom Morris. Tom, good morning, mate. Much needed sunshine, says Tom. Sunday View brings much needed sunshine to a wet and filthy Sunday here in the Northwest. Thanks for saying that, Tom. The rain's beating against the window so hard, I swear it's going to cave in. Yeah, it's eased off a bit here, Tom, in Salford. We're on the Salford Riviera here, down here. Different types of Salford. We're in the good part. I keep telling myself that. Hi to Sooty, who says the rain's getting through his keyhole. Through the keyhole. Channeling your, what's his name? He's very funny. What's the comedian's name? He's very, very, very funny. Keith Lemon. Is it Keith Lemon? Who does that through keyhole now. I like watching him quite a bit. I think he's very funny. Hi to David, who says, has anyone else watched To the Devil a Daughter by Intelligence Officer Wheatley? A teenage female antichrist to capture and speak to the world's youth when the time came. David, I haven't a Scooby-Doo what you're talking about. But that's no reflection on you, mate. That's more of a negative on me. To the Devil a Daughter. Right, I'm aware of that. Is there a production of it? What's going on? What's happening? I don't know, but fill me in. Fill me in. Jason tweets, some say that China has a digital currency backed by gold that's ready to go. If China introduced it, the dollar would take a nosedive in value, which the US would see as an act of war. However, if physical cash is a pathogen vector, then it maybe gives China a pass to introduce this new digital currency. That's interesting, David. I didn't hear that or I haven't seen anything around that, but thanks for that. Hi to Ash, by the way. Thank you for the correction, Ash. Ash says, Richie, passengers from the second flight from Wuhan did go to a conference centre in Milton Keynes, and they didn't go to the Wirral. Is it a sign that the National Health Service is at full capacity? Thanks for that, Ash. Appreciate that. Steve James has sent me a photograph. And the photograph is of a man being wheeled into an accident and emergency in Greater Manchester. Apparently with a winter cold. But Steve, you've just shown me a couple of photographs, mate. Is there a supporting document or newspaper story to show that the guy was being wheeled in for suspected coronavirus? It's just a couple of pictures. So I don't know, basically. Thanks for your tweets. Hi to Mawinga. John Parsons, my friend in Salford, says, Richie, the Irish election needs to be run again. Jesus Christ, John. Listen, it's no skin off of my teeth. I couldn't care less. But in Ireland, they might have election lash fatigue. No way they can form a government that would represent the electorate, says John, with the three-way tie. Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil. Essentially, says John, the people have said none of the above, says John. And Jean Anne is watching the coverage of it on Irish television with great interest as she's listening to this. Following the tally men, she says, Mary Lou McDonald, Sinn Féin's leader, about to trounce Pascal O'Donoghue in Dublin Central. That's fascinating, she says. Leo Varadkar, the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, is the leader of Fine Gael. He's having a really bad day. It's like a sport here in Ireland, says Jean Anne. And it is looking like Sinn Féin's voters the majority of them anyway are looking like they're under 35, which proves a point. That point being the under 35s are not prejudiced by Sinn Féin's links to the Republicans and the Irish Republican Army, says Jean Ann. Yes, that is interesting. Conor Lenehan is at the count in the RDS in Dublin, and he has said that it was stupid and it was wrong of both the major parties to have announced before the election that they wouldn't do a deal with Sinn Féin if Sinn Féin got a large vote share. And Conor Lenehan might be right in saying that. That's quite true. Micheál Martin, the leader of Fianna Fáil, and Leo Varadkar, the leader of Fine Gael, and the incumbent Taoiseach, they both said before the election, we wouldn't get into bed with Sinn Féin. They might get into bed with one another, maybe. Who knows? Right, let's move swiftly on. I didn't think I'd have enough material today, because I've been under the weather. But, Jesus, the time is flying, be Jesus. The Mail on Sunday. Fugitive American wife Anne Sokoulis, who was wanted over the death of Harry Dunn, was a CIA spy, and she held a higher rank than her husband. This is Anne Sokoulis, who crashed into Harry Dunn's motorbike outside RAF Croughton. She was driving on the wrong side of the road. She's a fucking idiot. Killed him, right? Apparently, British ministers are aware of Sokoulis' career in espionage, but apparently she wasn't active while in the UK last year. But a security source told the Mail, you never really know, and you never really leave the CIA, right? Harry Dunn's mother, Charlotte, said things are beginning to fall into place and we're beginning to understand why they won't let this woman come back to the UK for questioning. Now, the former Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt and also the former Health Secretary was on Sophie Ridge on Sunday this morning. He's not happy that Anne Sokoulis will not be extradited to the UK.
Well, it may have a bearing on it. And, you know, I don't know the truth of these things because I'm not Foreign Secretary anymore. But I still think it is totally and utterly unacceptable that she is not facing justice in the UK. And if anyone is questioning that, I think we just need to ask what would have happened if the boot had been on the other foot, if a British diplomat had been involved in a road accident in the United States where someone had died and had fled on a private plane back to the UK and was evading justice. I don't think President Trump would stand for that for one second, and I don't think Britain would have behaved in that way. And I would just say to the United States, I'm someone who is the strongest supporter of the special relationship. I think in a very uncertain world, the democracies of the world need to stand together. But if we're going to be an alliance, you know, we need to treat each other like allies, and that is not happening.
So you think the US is not treating us as an ally over this case?
And I think they should send Anne Sokoulis back. We are, alongside America, the country that has done the most to stand up for the rule of law across the world. And we need to show an example in cases like this.
Yeah. You can blame Tony Blair, of course, Anthony Blair, you know. Miranda, as he used to be known when he was hanging around toilets. Miranda, Tony Blair. Oh, yeah, there's a lot you don't know about Tony Blair. I've gotten into that many times over the years, the secret life of Tony Blair and how Tony Blair came to be Prime Minister. Tony Blair's sex life would make Caligula blush, I could be here all day long. Right? That's how, one of the reasons Blair became Prime Minister. Anyway, I'm not going to get into it today. I might do it again in the future because it's been a long time. In 2003, the extradition treaty signed between the UK and the US was horrendously one-sided and favoured the United States completely, allowing the US, when it wanted, to demand that a UK citizen could be extradited to the US for an offence committed against US law, even if that alleged offence was committed in the UK. Imagine that. And Blair signed up to that. Now, there was no reciprocity. I can never say that fucking word. There was no reciprocal right given to the UK. In short, the US could say, we want to extradite this person, a UK citizen, over here, because we believe they committed an offence which is against US law. And even though it was committed in the UK by a UK person working there, we want that person to come here anyway. And the UK fucking agreed to it, Tony Blair, with no reciprocal rights. Yes, yes. And also, when Blair signed up to this in 2003, they removed the responsibility, the requirement of the USA to provide what's known as prima facie evidence to support the request for extradition. Meaning that the United States only requires to be reasonably suspicious that somebody has done something, and we will say no problems, we will just hand the person over. But again, no reciprocal rights for the UK. That was Tony Blair. Amazing. And Sikoutis is not going to come back to the UK. Anyway, what are you going to do? Must be terrible for the family of Harry Dunn. I don't know why she won't come back, because she's not going to go to jail. They don't put you in jail for being fucking stupid. You know? She won't go to prison for that. She's a Yank. The wife of a diplomat. She came out of a fucking Air Force base. She's stupid. And she drove on the wrong side of the road. Probably have to make some restitution to the Dunn family. They're not going to put her in prison for it. I wouldn't imagine. Anyway, Jean Ann sent me a newspaper story this morning. The Mail on Sunday is covering Graham Linehan. Graham Linehan is most famous for being the creator of Father Ted, which is an excellent sitcom, one of the funniest in recent years. And Linehan has become the bane, at least he thinks he has, of transgender extremists online, because as Graham Linehan sees it, he has become the most hated man on the internet because he stood up to transgender extremists. Now, I'm smirking, to be honest, reading this morning because of who Graham Linehan is. And I'll get to that in a minute. He says, today I'm one of the most loathed figures on the internet. I think he's got delusions of grandeur, Graham Linehan, but let's pretend he is. He says his speaking events have been cancelled, he's been sued, and the police have visited his home, and former friends have turned their backs on him. Why? Because of a thought crime. And the thought crime, says Graham Linehan, is that he believes biological reality exists. I believe women are females, he writes. I believe everyone should be able to present themselves as they wish, but that women's hard-won rights must not be compromised for the benefit of men suffering body dysphoria, which is to say men who feel they are stuck in the wrong body. Most of all, I believe the gender ideology in its currently fashionable form is dangerous, incoherent nonsense, writes Graham Linehan. I believe trans people, those unfortunate enough to suffer body dysphoria, are having their condition exploited and trivialised by abusive, controlling and authoritarian trans rights activists. And I think women and children are suffering because of it. Worst of all, I say so loudly, and this makes me public enemy number one. Again, delusions of grandeur, right? I make my arguments forcefully because I'm concerned, sometimes with humour, because I'm a comedy writer, and often while cursing because I'm Irish. It's the humour they hate most. It's kryptonite to these activists. I'm 51. I've never seen anything like the authoritarianism on display, the desperate desire to shut down the conversation. No genuine civil rights movement advances in secret, but this one has as one of its mantras, no debate. So while we are in a world where male sexual offenders in bad wigs assault female prisoners, where rape crisis centres are defunded because they won't admit men, and where a bloke in a full beard tells school children that he's a lesbian, we're informed with venomous aggression that we may not talk about any of it. See, everything that Graham Linehan has written there in his piece, in the Mail on Sunday, I agree with. But I also would say to Graham Linehan, cry me a fucking river, Graham. Because Graham Linehan is a perfect example of somebody who's screaming bloody fucking murder now because he is having events cancelled, right? Because he has been spoken to by the police for his opinions. It's a terrible thing. It's dystopian. It's fucking Chinese in its extremity. It's dreadful. How could this be free Britain in 2020 and all the rest of it? But Graham Linehan couldn't give a shit when it happens to other people. And that is provable. Because people like me have contacted Graham Linehan in the past to ask him for interviews. But people like me have to be avoided. Because we've interviewed people like him. Ironically, but speaking about different subjects. Oh, stand up for my rights now, says Graham Linehan. I'm being fucking targeted. Yes! But jazz saxophonists like Gilad Atzmon are being targeted because they talk about what is Jewish identity. People are being driven out of events that they booked where thousands of tickets have been sold. People like David Icke and others. Because of what they might say or what they might have said in the past. And Graham Linehan doesn't give a fuck about it. There's an artist now demanding that he be defended and that people stand alongside him, but wouldn't do it for anybody else. And I know full well that he's been made aware of what's happening to other people around other issues. It's the oldest adage in the world. They came for the Jews and I said, fuck all. They came for the... for the communists, and I said, fuck all. They came for the socialists, and I sat on my fucking hands, and then they came for me. So I'm fed up to the back teeth of people like Graham Linehan. I couldn't give a fuck about him anymore if he's getting his door banged down by the police because he called some man who pretends to be a woman a man. Tough shit, Paddy. You're either for free speech and freedom of expression for everybody, in which case you won't refuse to speak with or appear on programmes with people because they're being targeted. You know, you won't refuse it. You'll say, yeah, I'll talk to you. I don't care. I don't care that you've had people on before that have been deemed persona non grata. I'm not talking about the Zionist influence on UK policy. I'm on here to talk about transgender issues. So of course I'll come on your fucking programme. But no. They don't do that, you see. So cry me a river, Graham Linehan. Couldn't give a shit, mate, to be honest. And that might sound childish, it might sound infantile, it might sound counterproductive, but no, it is not. Those who scream the loudest about being targeted and about being deplatformed and about being banned have never, ever stood alongside anybody else who was deplatformed and banned. And that makes me sick to my fucking stomach. You'll never hear me, you'll never see me ignore when people like the goons on InfoWars or Tommy Robinson or what's her name, I can't remember, Hopkins, is it? You'll never hear me or see me adopt a kind of a silence when these repulsive people are banned, these race baiters. I'll always stand up for them, always, and say don't ban them, don't deplatform them, don't kick them out. They have a human right to say what it is they want to say. And they should be allowed to use the same platforms as everybody else. And if you don't like what it is they're saying, debate them. And either beat them in debate or go home with your tail between your legs. But don't demand that they be banned or deleted. Never. Never would I fail to stand up for people being banned. But these fucking... yesterday, celebrities like Graham Linehan crying about it now. Fuck off. You know, I've no time for you because you don't care about anybody else. You know, it's come to your doorstep now. You're demanding that people rally around you. But where were you when others are being banned and deplatformed? You know where you were, Graham? You didn't give a fucking shit because you didn't agree with them. Stand up for people. But first and foremost, stand up for the people you don't agree with. That's where censorship ends. It ends when you ignore the people you do agree with and say, yeah, of course I support your rights, and you start to look at those being banned with whom you disagree. That's how censorship ends. Yeah, I can't stand that fucker, but there's no way I'm agreeing with him being censored. Can't stand him. He's a thug. Horrible little bastard. But he shouldn't have his PayPal deleted. He shouldn't have his bank account suspended. He shouldn't be fucking banned from Facebook. That's where it begins. That's how you end it. Graham Linehan crying. Of course, it's absolutely terrifying that people are having their doors knocked on because they had an argument on Twitter with an ugly-looking bastard in a wig. Yes, it is terrifying. It's rotten. It's Orwellian in the extreme. It's the fucking definition of planet dystopia. Wow, can you believe it? In 2020, I could go online today with some fucking arsehole trans activist and say to that person, well, look, no matter what you say, you'll never be a woman as far as I'm concerned. I could have plod outside the door tomorrow morning. Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's horrendous. But cry me a river, you know? You know? Stand up for free speech and freedom of expression for every man, woman and child on planet Earth. No matter what they say. The goons, the fools who are genuinely racist. Fuck it, don't deny them a platform. Embarrass them. Eviscerate them through public debate. You know? So I am annoyed. I was annoyed when I read that this morning. The whinging, whining, fucking mealy-mouthed tone of that article by Graham Linehan. Piss off. No interest in you. Anyway, did I make myself clear there? I did. I think I might have done. Look, there was loads more to get through this morning, but I'm going to leave it. There's a big story about gas boilers in the Telegraph being banned. That's important. There's a story about the about data mining in the Labour Party, hacking, which is important and interesting as well. And we were going to have a listen to the Justice Secretary talking about what to do with terrorists and early release, which has been, well, seemingly a big problem in recent times with attacks on London Bridge, of course, and elsewhere in London, Streatham as well. But I don't have time to get into any of that. I will be with you tomorrow. I'm not well, to be honest. I'm not being able to shake this feckin' bug that I have, and the breathing problems that come with it. It's been a real pain in the arse. I don't know why it's taken so long to shift. I do meet people, you know, and they say to me, oh, I had a bad infection as well. It took 5 or 6 weeks, Richie. But that sounds like a long time, that. I'm a healthy guy who eats healthy. I've never smoked. I'm very fit. It should run through you, really. You know, any infection, 2 weeks should be it, really. You know, but I've been putting up with this now for over a month. And I'm getting fed up with it. It's bringing me down, to be honest. So, there you are. Right, I'm going to love you and leave you. I might have woken you up with that rant there. I didn't mean to do that. We will be back again tomorrow morning at 9:30 with the newspaper review. In theory, although if I do go to the doctor, the newspaper review might not happen tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. And we'll see how it goes. Play it by ear. I always update you on Twitter anyway, so it's twitter.com/RichieAllenShow. Right, I'm out of here. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another and have a great Sunday. All right, bye for me. Bye.